one of my thoughts about being president was, as we grew our organization, I was going to experience a lot of the problems that our clients were experiencing. So I would be more helpful to them if I would, you know, go through. So many people like us don't grow an organization, but we decided to grow an organization where we had people and payroll and expectations. But I just kept thinking, wow, if I can learn from this, there's a bigger purpose in it.
Welcome to the Lead Like Jesus podcast. This is Karen Conley, and I am so honored to be your host for today. And over the last couple of years, we have had many terrific guests and great podcasts, but I have a feeling for our listening audience that this is going to become one of our absolute new favorites. And our guest for today is, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, the secret sauce for Ken Blanchard as well as Ken Blanchard Companies. We have the privilege of having with us Dr. Margie Blanchard, co-founder of Ken Blanchard Companies, served as the president there from 1987 to 97, currently a director and also the head of Office of the Future. Margie, thank you so much for coming and being a part of this podcast today.
Well, I'm delighted to be here.
I always joke with my husband, Chris, that behind every great man is about 10 great women. But I think knowing you and having sat under your leadership, I think you may actually have the capability of 10 great women. And it is so incredible to see how you and Ken together have been used across this country and literally around the globe. So very glad to have you on for the podcast today. I know that you have been a little bit under the weather, so we hope that you're feeling better.
I am. And I would say Ken and I have just been very blessed over the years.
You have taken those blessings and allowed a lot of other people to be blessed. And so we're grateful for you. And I know that the topic of our show for today is one that every single person listening to this podcast can benefit from. As I was preparing for this and thinking through this, I thought, you know, there are different topics that some people can need more than others, but this is one that I think every leader needs to hear. And we have the opportunity to talk to you today about one of the books that you have co-authored, and that's The 1 Minute Manager Balances Work and Life. And I love the tagline to this, a healthy lifestyle is the key to success. So that book has been out for a little while now. Would you maybe, before we get into the content of it, just give us a little bit of the story behind this particular book?
Well, this has been an area of mine for a long time. And I think it's actually becoming more important because the younger generations, they talk about it openly. I don't think we talked about it quite as openly when I was as heavily involved in leadership. But I think the backstory of this was a lot of the work that Ken and I did with the Young Presidents Organization. This is a group of people who become presidents of their own companies before age 40. They have to have a certain $5 million in revenue and 50 employees. And we were privileged to be teachers and resources for that group. And I just looked at all of the lives of these successful, mostly men at that point, although there are many women now, and I was just seeing just a lot of disasters in terms of they had reached their pinnacle in terms of success, but they had forfeited their relationships often with their family members, their kids, and their marriages. And it just seemed to me that there was a better way, that we needed to look at this a lot more carefully and not have to pay such a heavy price for success. And so that led me to do some studying and work, and it led me actually to pretty impressive things. One was when I was a doctoral student, I had a chance to interview about 300 people about the best time in their life. You know, not a day or a week, but maybe a 3-4 week, even longer period. And we talked the folks about, you know, what was going on in their life and what was happening and what made that such a great period in their life. And, you know, as we went sifted through all these stories, we pulled out 4 key ingredients. And I'm going to talk about those ingredients today. And then there's another whole set of studies that have been going on year after year about stress and about people answering the question, can stress make you sick, basically. I don't know if you've seen the list of stress events in people's lives.
Yes.
It starts with death of a spouse, 100 points, divorce, 75 points, marriage, 50, remarriage, 55, a child going off to school, maybe 30, a child returning, 35, you know, the holidays, and all these scores. And according to the research, if you pile up more than 300 stress points in the course of 12 months, then you have about an 80% chance of becoming seriously ill.
Wow.
Now we have something new to be worried about. You know, some very innovative people looked at, well, if 80% got sick and 20% did not, what was going on in the lives of people who did not get sick, who were going through all these stressors? They began to call these people psychologically hardy people. And what was totally fascinating to me was that the ingredients that they teased out of those people's lives were the very same ingredients that we found were teased out of these stories of peak periods of happiness. So I started thinking about balance not as time, but as ingredients. If you can pay attention to certain ingredients in your life, they kind of balance each other out, but they can be low to high based on the season that you're going through in your life. And so that became the genesis of the work in the book that we published.
Margie, the phrase that you just used, balance not as time, but ingredients.
Right.
That to me is a game changer, because I know for Chris and myself, our calendar and our time is the most stressful thing we ever talk about, because it is. It feels like there's only 24 hours in every day and we've got to fit it all in. So that time factor kind of hits a nerve that already creates a little bit of tension. But when you think about it from a different perspective and put it into the context of an ingredient, it feels like something that's winnable.
It is. And it's certainly something you can pay attention to, that you can set goals around, that can accommodate that there are different seasons in your life with different amounts of time required. You know, a young mother with a couple of kids and no grandparents nearby is going to have a different life than somebody who sends their kids off to school. So there are seasons that need to be looked at. And anyway, ingredients, I think, is a way of getting your arms around something. And time is a big thing. I mean, if you look at your calendar and, you know, it does tell you how you're spending your life, but I don't think it's the only thing. And I think sometimes people see it as some kind of formula. Mm. And I just don't believe that that's appropriate for today.
I know you have alluded to already how this generation is a little bit more talkative about this whole topic of work-life balance. You talked about the indications of stress and that influence. Is there anything else that was maybe important that brought you guys to address this topic of work-life balance?
Well, I think the biggest thing is just living our own life and seeing the different seasons that we lived through. I mean, when I was a doctoral student, for instance, that's a very stressful time. And, you know, trying to put that in on top of a family life. So I think a lot of my interest in this probably came out of observing my own life and the life of my friends and family. And I think if I figured it all out, I'd probably lose interest.
Right.
So I think it's a, you know, it's something that stays with you as long as you haven't figured it completely out.
What I love about this conversation, particularly as a woman, you had every ball to juggle. You were fully engaged in your company, fully engaged in raising a family at different seasons. To know that, okay, it is possible and that there are different seasons, and to hear that from you, I think gives a lot of credibility to what you have discovered. So I'm excited that we're able to learn from you and your wisdom as you and Ken have navigated this in your own life. This is not just from research, but this is you living it out as well. Tell us a little bit, as we are thinking about this, what are some common reasons why so many leaders fail at this work-life balance?
Well, I think if we go back to these ingredients, and I'll explain what each ingredient is, and you can sort of see, it would be easy to lose touch with one of the ingredients, and then I think you would suffer the consequences. So the first ingredient is perspective. And perspective is the biggest ingredient. It's like taking a mental helicopter and looking at your life and saying, going on with my life right now? What's most important? What is this season I'm in? It's sort of making meaning out of your life. And it's a tough one. It's especially tough if there are some major changes, if you are ill, or if you get a divorce, or if you lose a job, or if something happens. And so often we don't miss it until it happens. And that script that you had for your life no longer is accurate, and you're going to have to rewrite it. That's perspective. Perspective is the big picture question, the Scarlett O'Hara question. So I'll think about that tomorrow. So that's the first ingredient. What's this period of your life mean, and what is most important in it? So that's the first ingredient. And when I was a doctoral student, one of the things that was so helpful to me was I knew that I wanted to teach in a college environment. And so I could be, you know, way stressed out, but as long as I had an idea of why, you know, Simon Sinek starts with why. Why was I doing this? Then that was protective for me. When I was president of the company, and it was very stressful, one of my thoughts about being president was as we grew our organization, I was going to experience a lot of the problems that our clients were experiencing. So I would be more helpful to them if I would, you know, go through. So many people like us don't grow an organization, but we decided to grow an organization where we had people and payroll and expectations. But I just kept thinking, wow, if I can learn from this, there's a bigger purpose in it. So perspective has a lot to do with purpose, with the why in your life. And sometimes that why is harder to see, and sometimes it's pretty clear. So you can kind of rate yourself on a low to high scale. So that's probably the most difficult to understand, but one of the ingredients. And certainly your spirituality or your beliefs about God, about why we're here on this earth, have a lot to do with your perspective. So that's the first ingredient.
You're right. When I think about stressful seasons that I have been through, it is sometimes if that why gets cloudy that you begin to lose hope and you begin to get discouraged. So if you can keep that why in front of you, then like you said, it's in front of you so you can persevere through whatever the adversity and the stress is.
Right. I mean, I don't know if you remember Man's Search for Meaning. You know, here he fellows in a concentration camp, horrible, horrible, horrible situation. You know, he wanted to survive to rewrite his book, which had been taken away from him, but he also found meaning in helping others during that horrible situation. But it takes thinking, and you have to think about what is the big why. Anyway, that's perspective.
So that's the first ingredient. What's the next ingredient?
Well, the next one is autonomy. And autonomy is a sort of a sense of, do you have choices to make? It's why I love our business, why I love our Lead Like Jesus business, if you will. It's how do you get better at doing the things that you do on a daily level? It's being able to choose things, but also just basically, one of the big questions that I often get, people will come up to me when I'm giving a speech and they'll say, you know, I would love to be a good public speaker, but I'm just scared. They're seeing themselves as limited in a skill area. And one of the things I love talking to them about is that public speaking is a trainable skill. You know, when you get up in front of people, you can learn where to look. And the first thing you learn to do is look at people's faces. You don't look at your feet or the ceiling. And some of those people are going to smile, and you look at them a lot.
Right.
Then you learn, what are you going to do with all this nervous energy? You know, do you put it in the fig leaf position in front of you and just shake?
Right.
Or do you use your arms and, you know, learn to discharge some of that energy as you're speaking? And as you watch great public speakers, my goodness, they're using their bodies, I think, to discharge their energy and also reinforce their message. And then the last thing is, how do you tell stories? How can you tell stories so that the pictures in your head become pictures in their head? And so now you're facing a talk or something like that. So how do you look at the people? How do you look for smiles? How do you use your energy? And then how do you tell stories that make your your speech comes come alive. And just those three things could make you look forward to it. That's a skill, and that's something that can build that sense of choice or that sense of control over some other part of my life. So I think, you know, skills comes down to choices. I think it does come down to skills, and it's one of the reasons I love the field we're in. You know, if we can help people become more skilled managers to do the 20% that's going to give them the 80% that's going to make the biggest difference, they're going to build confidence that they can be a very positive influence in someone's life. And so skills as parents, skills as spouses. Ken and I think we probably have gone to more marriage seminars than a lot of our friends. And each one of them teaches us something because it's important to us. And so all of that, I think, builds your autonomy. Now, when I was a doctoral student, I would say that period of life I felt was pretty much in control of my committee. Now, I chose to be in that program, and that was a big thing. But during that 2 or 3 year period, I didn't feel I had time or could take time to read novels or do anything else. I was very focused on what I needed to do. Boy, when I finished that degree, did I ever love going back to making other choices,
right,
in terms of the way that I was using my time. So I would have rated my perspective high, but I would have rated my autonomy on a relatively low level at that point in terms of my day-to-day activities.
I think what I'm hearing you say is that you may have a season where you are under the gun, whether it's a higher level executive in your company, maybe you're not the top of the totem pole, and that you have some things that are required. And so maybe your autonomy is a little bit lower at that time, but your perspective maybe is where it's higher at that season. And you're understanding this is for a short season and that there will be other seasons where you have greater autonomy. Is that an accurate way to?
Exactly right. Or having small children that require a lot of time and effort and attention, not always going to be that way. You know, this is important to you, and you're going to have less autonomy then than you may have, you know, at a later season.
Absolutely. Well, as someone who's about 2 months from being an empty nester, you're right. It's in the middle of it, it feels like it's going to be forever. But if you do realize that there are seasons, it does come and go very quickly. So you're right. Tell us about the third ingredient, Margie.
Well, the third ingredient is connectedness. It's how connected you are to your environment, to other people, to God, or spiritual, whatever your spiritual connection is. That's a very protective thing. When I was a doctoral student, I had some students who were partners in misery, thought we were suffering, but honestly, I look back at some of those pictures and I realized what a rich time that was. Very often people, when they talked about the best period of their life, they went back to high school or college when they had that group of friends that just hung out and had a lot of time for each other. And so having people around you that you connect with is a very protective thing. And the hardest thing is when you move. Let's say you move to a new environment and you don't know anybody. You don't have a hairdresser. You don't know anyone. There's a lot of stress and illness following major relocations, and you can't do anything about it right away. You know, you have to kind of live into it while maybe that's the time to take a course and do something in terms of autonomy or remind yourself that, you know, it took you a year to make really good friends or more than that the last time you lived. So you have to use the ingredients to kind of balance out your sense of, you know, what's going on right now.
That's fascinating, Margie, as I'm listening to you, applies to so many different stages of life. I think about my children heading off to college and thinking, you know what, that's right. They need to understand those ingredients and know there's going to be a season where they have less connectedness. So to have an awareness of those other aspects of life and to build them into their life while they are kind of, like you said, living into it.
Right. So. Right. Just to pay attention to it.
Absolutely. And so tell us the fourth ingredient.
And that has to do with your body. I call it tone, and it has to do with seven ingredients. So I'm going to ask you to think about how you're doing in seven ingredients, and I hope I can remember them. I have not written them down. But the first one is, are you a smoker? We always pick on the smokers first.
Okay.
But you don't smoke anything. You're a non-smoker. You get 6 to 8 hours of good sleep a night. exercise at least 20 to 25 minutes, at least 3 to 4 times a week. And that 20 minutes doesn't include the putting on of the gym shorts.
Thank you for clarifying that. We just lost a couple people on that.
Exactly. That you eat breakfast. There's a lot of data that says that people eat breakfast have greater tone. Another one is alcohol, that you have no more than 1 or 2 drinks a day and you don't save them all up and have them on the same night. Another is the food you eat, if you avoid high sugar, high salt, and high fat, that generally your tone will be better. And so it really has to do with people that take good care of themselves or are healing want to look better. They want to feel better. And so one of the things that we noticed with these young presidents was many of them sacrificed their health to become very successful. And their health was something that turned out to be very, very important, but they had kind of sacrificed it, put it on the back burner, and they were suffering as a result of it. And so tone, from my perspective, is how do you feel about your body? Are you taking care of this temple that God has given you? Is this an area? Sometimes if everything else is out of control, that's the best area to start. You can measure it. One day you can walk a half a mile, and a couple of weeks you can walk a mile. You can keep track of things. And generally, it's funny, as people start taking care of their bodies, sometimes they meet other friends that also want to take care of their bodies. And maybe they walk and talk about life and how they're going to get through these next few years as friends together. And I've been walking with the same ladies out on the golf course for many, many years. And, the first 20 minutes we complain about our bodies, the second we solve the problems of the world, and the third 20 minutes we talk about how we're going to look better than anybody else in our peer group.
That's great.
Because we're going to build our strength. And you know what? I make it to those meetings every time that I can because I've got compadres on that journey. So these things can balance each other out. You can pay attention if one is low. You can make sure that you don't let the other three go. Or you can work on one of the other three until this other one comes back up to a level that is satisfying to you. So it's an ingredient model. It's something you can pay attention to. You can talk to with your spouse about it or your children. You can set goals around it. And I think it's just a much kinder way to look at balance in your life.
Margie, as we come to the end of our time together for this podcast, you do have wisdom. You and Ken have walked through this journey and the stressful times and the successful times and all of those things. And maybe you could just speak to our audience right now. Maybe there's a leader out there and they are just in this treadmill of just feeling like they can never get to the end of their to-do list. Work is always overriding. There's just not this sense of balance right now. What would be the one thing that you would want them to hear that would maybe be that catalyst to help them make a change?
I guess what I would really ask them to ask themselves is what's most important to them. I remember Tom Landry, somebody asked him, how can you stay so calm, in this field, this coaching field? And he said, well, I have my priorities. First is my Lord. Second is my wife. Third are my children. Fourth is my job. He said, if I lose on Sunday, I have a lot left over. And so I guess that's the question I would ask is what's most important to you and are you feeding? Are you giving some of your time to that or are you giving it all away? It's a hard question to ask and there are some jobs that require for a period of years, I think about sometimes lawyers or doctors, where they're required in order to be viable candidates to give their all. But I hope they don't give it all. I hope they retain some measure of these other ingredients and realize that we have to pay attention to each of these things or we could lose it all. I've been sick the last couple of weeks, and one of the things that irritates me about being sick is that when you feel good, You forget what it feels like to be sick.
Right.
When you feel sick, you say, oh, why? How did I ever forget? I have this whole list right now when I'm getting ready in the morning of all the ways I could be feeling that are lousy. So so that I can be grateful.
There you go. There
so
you go.
I think perspective is still the most important one here.
Absolutely.
And if I were to talk to somebody that really is overworked, I would really try to get to the why. And is there a way that you can reclaim some of those other ingredients?
Margie, I am so grateful for all of the ways that you have been a part of the Ken Blanchard companies and the way that you guys live and model this out and just in such a real way that everybody can relate to, and then yet also such an easy, measurable, and memorable way. And so as I walk away from this podcast, I hope everyone else will as well, to think about those four ingredients of perspective, autonomy, connectedness, and tone. And to really ask those questions. We only have this one life here. And so to ask, where are you in those four areas, and make sure that you're living your best why. And so, Dr. Blanchard, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Lead Like Jesus. If you want to find The 1 Minute Manager Balances Work and Life, you can find that on Amazon. And Dr. Blanchard, if somebody has a question that they might want to ask you, where should they, is there a way that they could reach out to you?
Certainly. Send me an email. Margie.Blanchard@KenBlanchard.com.
Thank you again for joining us for this podcast. And if you would like more information on Lead Like Jesus, please also check out LeadLikeJesus.com.